This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. Jewels of Illumination books 1-3 box set is out. Oban is a broken man who just might find redemption guarding a scholar from bandits, a criminal syndicate, and a dark necromancer. Avina is a woman haunted by guilt who asks wonder if she can trust Oban. Together, they can break free of their past or be lost. You can buy or borrow Jewels of Illuminations book 1-3 from Amazon. Today, I'm joined by Cully Mack. She's the author of the fantasy novel, A Voice That Thunders.
How are you doing today, Cully?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I always like to start these interviews out with a fun question or two. So, Cully, what is your favorite season of the year?
I'm going to have to go with summer.
Summer?
I like it when it's hot.
I like it when it's not hot and not cold. So,
well,
it's nice right now.
I live in England, so we don't get it very hot very often.
No, it depends on our summers here. Sometimes it's fine, and other times it gets a little bad. And it's like England, where no one has air conditioning. So
no, well, we don't really need it, to be fair.
Yeah, like there's like you get like one heat wave a summer.
Yeah. I was in Italy a couple of years ago when they had their heat wave, so it was about 44 degrees, and that for me was just nice.
I don't know how hot 44 degrees is.
Oh, I don't know what it is in Fahrenheit. Yeah. No.
Yeah. I do think that's a little, I think that's probably over 100, I think.
Yeah, I think it is just.
Well, Cully, so how long have you wanted to be an author?
Not that long, actually. I'm quite a late starter. I don't know. When I was growing up, I think I thought writing was for professionals. I never really gave it much thought and thought about that sort of opportunity for myself. But around 2012-ish, I went on a beginner's writing course with my mother, and I created a character on that course called Ammo, and he just never left my head. And I really enjoyed the whole experience, and from there I decided to go back to university and study how to do creative writing.
All right.
So that was my beginning of my journey, really, which is where my books came from.
So what prompted you and your mother to take a writing class?
Do you know, my mum was going on all sorts of classes and she's doing all sorts of like hobbies and interests. She just retired.
Yeah, I was about to ask.
Yeah, and she just said she was going to do it, and I thought, oh, I wouldn't mind giving that a try. And it was very basic. It was like a 12-week course, and each week it covered a different topic, like it might be dialogue one week, or how to develop a character the next, and how to plot a story. And I wrote a story with this character in, which is completely different to my novels, but he never left my mind. So, but yeah, I really enjoyed the course, and I didn't want to stop.
So let's talk about your book, A Voice of Thunders, and it's naive heroine Mira. What's it about? What's she about? What's going on?
A Voice of Thunders is, it's actually got two protagonists. It's two siblings. They're called Mira and Gabe, and they live in rock shelters. And unbeknown to them, until their clan gets attacked, they're on the other side of the world. There are these gods that have come through portals, and they're on a conquest to take over the world. And it's set in sort of a pre-civilization era, so when these so-called, they're not gods, but they portray themselves as gods. When they arrive, they basically start to show humanity different things, like how to write, how to use metallurgy and various other things, and they turn humanity into slaves, basically. So it just, you've got this going on the other side of the world, and that they end up invading the clan where these two siblings live who get separated, and that's where their journey begins. One of them, the girl, Mira, is taken back to one of the gods' locations, and her brother is basically sent on a quest to find his sister. But the story really follows his sister's journey, what she experiences when she goes to this new land.
Okay. Sounds good, yeah. So you mentioned that this was based sort of on Mesopotamian mythology.
Yeah. When I was at uni, I was quite interested in myth texts, and I'd started to become aware of things like Watchers and Nephilim becoming quite popular in pop culture and television shows. And so I started looking into that a bit more, and I started with the Book of Enoch, and then
Book of Enoch's where you want to go if you want to do Watcher stuff. Do you read like the Book of Giants or
but my focus was really on the Book of Enoch, Book One of Enoch. But then I started to look into Mesopotamian literature, and there was just a whole world of literature that has never really been explored. And even though we've got like the Watchers and the Nephilim from the Enoch side, they're called the Apkallu according to the Sumerians and sort of like people in the Mesopotamian region, and their stories are the same. They're just using different terminology, but the Mesopotamian texts or the Sumerian texts, they just expand on subjects that are only briefly washed over really in Book of Enoch. So it just really, really fascinates me. It fascinates me about any type of myth fascinates me, but this myth in particular, it just gripped me. I just thought it made great conflict when you think that, you know, supernatural beings interacting with humanity, and what that conflict can bring.
Yeah, that's always a great idea. So it was just kind of that you weren't really drawing anything else, just sort of the theme of it.
I go into quite a lot in my books, sort of like about ancient gods. There's themes of destiny, and So I do talk about the different gods. Some of them are made up. I did a lot of research on the area at the time, the location of what it was like to live in Mesopotamia sort of 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, what their belief systems were, how they looked at religion, different deities. Some of those I've created.
I'm sorry, I lost you.
I've got...
You're cutting up, I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you started breaking up.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're fine.
All right. Yeah, so I mean, I'm doing a mixture. I'm relying heavily on Mesopotamian mythology, but I'm also obviously a fantasy writer at heart. So there's things that I've sort of made up myself. I use a lot of elemental magic, and I have a lot of beasts in my book that are all made up. They're basically chimeric type creatures. So where you've got the mythology of like immortal beings coming to Earth, and the Enoch would say they're Watchers, and the Nephilim are the offspring of humans and these immortal beings. I sort of take that a bit further than that. So I would say that I've got giants in my series, and if they die, they're immortal. So they die physically, but they don't die. Their essence doesn't die. So one of the gods will transfer that essence into these hybrid creatures that he makes. They're part lion, part porcupine. They're a mixture. It's quite generic.
Okay.
So I have lots of things like that obviously aren't straight from the mythology.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I mean, there's definitely like sort of chimeric stuff in Sumerian. There are monsters. You have like the throne guardians, which are, you know, winged lions. Yeah. They're like sphinxes, kind of. You know, that sort of all kind of comes out of that area.
They use a lot of bull imagery, don't they? with
You see it a lot with like angel descriptions in the Old Testament. They're very similar to like throne guardians and protectors of gods and stuff in Mesopotamia. Well, it's not surprising. I mean, the Israelites and the Sumerians, I mean, they're both like, you know, Semitic peoples. They both kind of have a similar ancestry and all came up in the same areas.
I've actually got a scene in book, is it in book two or three? I can't remember which book it's in now, where two of the characters end up in an arena with a lot of those it's more of the bowmen creatures.
Okay.
Some of them are humanoid with maybe hoofed hooves, and some of them are more bowl-like with hardly any human features. But there's this great big battle scene that takes place amongst this in this arena where two characters who are mortal are in a big arena fighting against a lot of immortal creatures, and it's quite fun how they survive that.
Sounds like fun. So where did the sort of idea come from to sort of write a story with like sort of very primitive characters? You say they live in rock shelter, so we're talking like pre-agriculture, like hunter-gatherers still.
Mira and Gabe, they live in rock shelters. They are basically hunter-gatherers. That they do incorporate a lot of fishing because they're basically on in a little cove. And then they don't stay there. Their clan gets slaughtered in the prequel, in the first chapters. So they don't stay there. So when they move away, they're obviously transported to another location. And in that location, it's almost pitched at the birth of civilization. So when they go there, they're experiencing everything new, like farming and clay, pottery, all things that make life a little bit easier to live with. They experience it for the first time. So they've got canals and water viaducts and things like this. And obviously writing, and basically they're just using, it's just set at that time period, so it's all new to these two characters, but it's not new to everybody. There's been people that have been living with these with these gods for around 10 to 15 years, so they've been building up civilization, they've been building like big cities. Although they're still quite basic compared to today's cultures. So that's where I set it. I wanted it to feel and be as authentic as it could have been around that time period in Mesopotamia.
Yeah, that's nice. There's a, I mean, because we do have a lot of, the Mesopotamians, the Sumerians left a lot of records behind. They're very meticulous. I actually was watching a mathematician. He was talking about the oldest known math error, and it's from a clay tablet that's like 5,000 years old, and like the guy messed up his arithmetic, or he left off an integer or something. So instead of like, he should have had like he should have been in like the hundreds, and he was like accidentally like wrote it down as thousands or whatever. And it was keeping track of beer ingredients of all things.
Yeah. Beer, I've got beer in my book. Beer was very popular in Mesopotamia. But that record that you're talking about, I think I've read about that, because a lot of the original writings that the Mesopotamian did were all around how they would record, like their sales and like what they'd purchased and what they'd sold. That was what the initial writings were all about, keeping records.
Yeah, it's like they developed like a number system, and that kind of just turned into a more developed written language.
But it is based on our like 60 minute an hour, which I find quite fascinating.
Yeah, we inherited the 360 degrees, the hours of the day, the 7 days of the week. That's all out of, I mean, that stuff's all like 6,000-7,000 years old.
Yeah.
So it's really fascinating. Like, yeah, we're still using like the same, you know, the same like week counts and stuff like that. Yeah. So, and and a lot of the same names too. Like, I mean, just in English, but like these, we're all named after kind of the same places and this astrological stuff and gods and all that.
Yeah. I do go into a little bit into astrology in my books, nothing too heavy, but I did a bit of research on the Babylonian astrology, where they use the three stars each system, but they basically separated the sky into three parts, named after three different gods. It's quite fascinating. It's just so in depth that my brain starts to explode after a while.
Yeah, so they separate the sky into 90 degree arcs.
On the ellipsis, is it the ellipsis?
Yeah, 90 degrees, yeah, that would be 360.
Yeah.
That's cool, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
So, how much research did you have to do with this? Because you're writing, like, start of civilization. That's it's not an area you normally find sort of in fantasy.
No, I did a lot, but to be fair, I was going to do it anyway, because as I mentioned, I started with the writing class, and then I returned back to uni, and I was studying English literature and creative writing. So for my dissertation, I was researching like ancient myth in young adult fantasy. So and I was specifically looking at fantasy literature that had Watcher or giant mythology in. So that was where I initially started from. And so I did my dissertation on it. So I did a lot of research, and I stayed on afterwards. I just got a bit of a learning bug. So I stayed on and did a master's. And that was where my first book came out of that. So yeah, okay. It was quite a lot of research.
Yeah. Giant's such a misleading term. It's really not quite what the ancients were describing as what we see. Because we see giants, we think huge, colossal creatures.
No, but they
Like, you have, like, the Titans, the Jotun from, like, Norse mythology, then the Nephilim. They're all called, translated usually as giant, but they weren't.
No.
They usually were just no bigger than normal people.
No, they weren't. I mean, people speculate and they say like different heights and things like that, but the general consensus.
Yeah, sometimes like they might be tall, but not necessarily outside the bounds of a human, or not much outside of the bounds of a human.
No.
Yeah.
Well, if you think just along the mythology of like them descending and having intermarriage with women, they couldn't be too giant, could they? It wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But
because I believe like Goliath, like his measurements in the Bible, because Goliath is supposed to be one of the giant clans.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, and he was only like 7 feet tall, which was actually really big back then, no doubt. But
yeah, I mean, they do say, the most of the ones that I've read is that they would say that they're between 6 and 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
Is average. And Gilgamesh, have you heard of Gilgamesh?
Yeah, Gilgamesh. So,
He was like a Babylonian version. Pardon?
He's like a demigod. He's the son of...
He was three-quarters. Three-quarters Apkallu.
Yeah.
He was also a giant, or a mighty man, as they called them. Yeah, so in my book, I've pitched them in my mind. I don't think I've literally said their height, because I don't want to get into like how to measure height in my books. I didn't know how I would do that without it sounding too modern. So if I've described their height, it's usually in comparison to other people around them. Like they might be like two heads taller or something like that. But in my mind, as I'm writing, I picture them around seven feet.
Yeah, I've done that where I think in one world I use like cubit and it's like 2 feet, and I'll be like, someone's like 3 cubits tall.
Yeah.
The average tall guy is like 2 cubits tall or something, or, it's like the length of an arm. I try to use more body part measurements necessarily. I mean, that's where the original measurements all came from.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, isn't it, when you're writing fantasy, because you don't want to push the reader out of the fantastical experience by going into like metric measurements or something that's really obviously.
Yeah, I'd be more fine with like imperial measurements, which are kind of more you know, they've been, they're more like, you know, because metrics are very much a modern thing of like standardizing and, you know, I mean, because the definition of a meter is like some very specific, like scientific principle or whatever. I don't remember what it is, but there's some very specific thing like that a meter is the length of. Like, I think maybe how far light goes in like a nanosecond or something like that. Like, it's a very interesting measurement.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the chimeric creatures that I've got in my book is similar to a scorpion, but I described it as the size of a horse, just so that I could, you know, assist the reader in picturing how big this creature is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not just, it's scorpion-like. It flies, it's got wings, and it's the size of a horse. So rather than getting into sizes and measurements and stuff.
Yeah. So what do you have coming up next?
I'm writing book 5, which in my series, which I haven't got a title for yet. I've sort of gone with the same theme. I'm using, so I've got a voice that thunders, a scream that shatters, a fire that whispers, and a vow that clashes. So I'm not sure what I'm going to call book 5. It's something to do with sound. Because obviously I've got voice, scream, whispers, and clashes. But I'm not sure yet. I've maybe echoes. I'm sort of playing around with echoes. So I'm currently writing book 5. And I'm also in the process of writing. I'm doing an anthology of short stories, really all from a female voice point of view, based on mythic women or fairy tales. Just recreating their voices. It's just an experimental thing.
Sure.
So I've been writing that, and that's what I'm at the moment.
Can you let our listeners know where they can connect with you on the internet?
I am on most of the social media. I'm on Twitter and Facebook the most. I am on Instagram. I've signed up for TikTok, but I don't know how to use it. So I'm not really on there very often. I'm on BookBub. And I sell, my books are exclusive to Amazon. So they're all in Kindle Unlimited. So I'm on Amazon.
Okay, cool.
And Goodreads is the other one. Come on.
All right. Well, it was really great talking with you, Colly.
Thank you.
You have yourself a great day.
And you. My day's finished now.
Yeah, I just realized that. It's like it's like 4:30 here in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's, well, I've gone midnight here.
All right. Well, you take
care. So anyway, you have a great day. Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.